I'm sorry, sir, but we don't have much time. Just nod if you can't get your words out.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast for the week of
October 5th. Just helping you.
You want to finish the year?
2015.
Yep. I am a projection, David T. Cole. I'm here with Mankey Witt, Sarah D. Bunting.
Can I borrow a mothball from somebody?
Hideous court blazer, Tara Ariano.
I have laces and studs.
Lead in a Broadway musical who still manages to shoot a TV show every week, unlike some people, Nathan Lane, Adam Grossworth.
Bill Coleman.
Oh boy, guys, I don't have my notes. I forgot to drop notes this week, so it's just going to be a shit show as far as Dave Cole and organization is concerned. It is the week of October 5th, 2015. Our lead topic is The Good Wife.
Yep.
Our guest is Adam Grossworth.
Hi, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Yay!
Okay, somebody else take it away, please.
All right.
I'm going to have a little lie down.
The Good Wife.
We're also having Skype problems, so this is going to be great.
We're here to talk about The Good Wife, which I will be covering again this season on Previously.tv. As this goes up, my first post will have been up. Nope.
No?
Not different one. since we know that Adam Grossworth is also a fan, we thought we would have him join us. And we also were graced with a screener of the season premiere, which never happens from CBS. So we all got to watch it early. I thought after a pretty crappy season six, this was a really exciting return to form. What did you guys think?
I think maybe, let's discuss. Are you under the doming it at this moment?
No, I like it.
Okay.
No, it's good.
All right. That being, lowered expectations.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Yeah, it was fine. But here's what I'm going to say about it's always a bad, it's always a, potential bad sign when a long running show does a career reset like that. When they try to move the, what's it called in football? What are the things called? The yard markers? When they try to move them back to the start of, the field.
That's not a thing, but okay.
She's, Alicia is like, she's got to start from the mailroom.
Right.
And that sometimes is sort of trying, and it's just like they wrote themselves into a corner.
So specifically what happens as we open the season is we're in Bond Court, which is where I guess people go who are not so indigent that they need a court-appointed attorney. They can pay a little. So they get a few bar attorneys that just hang out there and then take their cases to just in front of the judge to get them bail. And then that's it for like $135 a head, apparently. And since Alicia has not been able to get a job since her whole scandal with the election, she's ended up there. This is what Dave is describing. But I think the Good Wife has sort of done a reset like that with her a bunch of times. A lot of the seasons ended with her, like, deciding to start a new firm or, whatever. So,
okay, but there's a difference.
That was kind of my problem with it. I mean, first of all, if you're going to hit reset on anything, it needs to be with the hairstyle. Just
yes.
Let Margalise have her curly hair. This is the scuzziest, most pathetic wig yet. There was like a right angle fold mark in it.
It does look like they found it under a bench in Bond Court, perhaps.
And what is with the leading ladies of a certain age on network dramas with the center parted, like, weird, fluffy, butt cut hair? Like, they've got hargitay in it too, and I do not get it.
Butt cut?
Yeah, it looks like a butt.
Down the middle, and then it kind of fluffs up on the side of the part, like little cheeks.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Don't
no,
get
I mean,
one.
I like the term butt cut. I don't like the butt cut.
I mean, I think part of this is probably just wheel spinning until she decides she does want to work with Lewis Canning after all. I mean, even by the end of the episode, that seemed to be where things
were
going.
Yeah.
So I'm not that bothered by it. Adam, what did you think?
I liked it a lot, and I didn't hate last season quite as much as most people did.
Yeah.
Until none of it mattered anymore.
Yeah.
So if anything, I'm kind of annoyed by the fact that they had to do all this resetting this season.
Yeah.
Right. Because I really liked her running for state's attorney. I really liked David Hyde Pierce. I liked all of that until suddenly they might as well not have done any of it.
Yeah.
And all the stuff with her and Carrie's firm and now they're all just back at Lockhart Gardner, even though it's called Lockhart August now. So that's kind of annoying that, like, basically last season doesn't need to have existed.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm now retroactively mad about last season in a way that I wasn't while it was happening.
Fair enough.
But just as an episode of The Good Wife, I thought this was a really good episode of The Good Wife.
The most exciting thing, in my opinion, that happened was that Margot Martindale started her arc on the show. And she is so good.
She's so good. And I was not, like, crazy about the setup of Alan Cumming. Like, I don't think he needs a reset necessarily. But if you're going to do that, giving him her, like, giving him Margot Martindale as a foil is amazing. I can't wait to watch them together.
Yes. So what happened is she got cast as Ruth Eastman. She's this, like, fancy Democratic strategist. And he courts her to come on to Peter's campaign, and she agrees, but on the condition that she kicks Eli out, basically. And so she's super bossy, and she wants to really manage Alicia and get her a chief of staff. And Eli licks his wounds for, like, 5 minutes, and then he gets a makeover and decides to present himself as Alicia's chief of staff, which is going to be amazing. I'm so excited about this, like, way more than anything else. And we get a great scene of him and Ruth, the Margot Martindale character, like, spitting nails at each other right at the end, which is like, this is what the whole show should be, but I'll take however much of it I can get. Anyone else?
I love her. I love him. I'm kind of tired of the Alicia after a time away is like a naive babe in the woods about something. Because it, like, the shit is tired. Her husband has been a political operator in the state for, as far as even we know, a decade.
Right.
And that this is how the writers choose to sort of make her sympathetic is really starting to wear. That's A. B, there's absolutely no way he's a viable presidential candidate. I know that they're trying to position him so that he gets the vice presidency, but this marriage is, like, non-existent, and that she's sort of like, yeah, whatever, no big deal. Like, I don't understand her take on it.
Whose take? Ruth?
Alicia's.
Oh, Alicia's. Okay.
Like, I'm not sure why she's agreeing to it. I'm not sure what they, meaning either the Florix or the writers, think is going to happen once Oppo research starts. Like,
yeah,
this is a Chicago politician also. Give me a fucking break. I don't know. Like, I get it. I get that they feel like they have to do this with Peter, but I'm not even sure why Peter is still on the show. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
there are major cracks showing in this that I feel like, especially after last year, where it was the campaign that led nowhere, like, back to the beginning. I don't know. I will keep watching, obviously, for Eli and Ruth, but...
Somebody's in the writer's room saying, but you remember, she's the good wife. She has to stand by him. That's the whole show.
But as I wrote in my post, what I like about this is that it brings more people, or this latest reset, is, at least, is that it brings more people in the mix who don't think she's Saint Alicia. Like, all of the other bar attorneys in Bond Court think she's bullshit. The judge has no patience for her. And Ruth already hates her guts, which, all of that is potentially interesting.
The judge
to me.
Eats pieces of shit like her for breakfast.
He sure does. Oh, Christopher McDonald is the Bond Court judge. So over it.
Yeah.
Anything else? What else even happened in this episode?
All I want
they continued
is
their amazing propensity for horrible brand names.
Oh,
they kept saying tack-on notes as if that was a thing. Like, just say sticky notes. Like, I understand you can't say post-its.
Yeah.
But just say sticky notes. No one says tack-on notes. And then they got the rights to say Roomba. So it was, like, even more jarring when they were like, this Roomba sucked up a tack-on note.
Yeah.
And it was the weirdest thing in the world that made me insane.
How about Postums?
Sure.
They're
that
like,
would be so much better.
Thing. They're slightly adhesive, thin pieces of steak.
No, Postum is also a thing. It's like
it's a breakfast
it's like food.
It's Mr. Burns food.
It's a Mr. Burns food, for
right.
sure.
Yeah.
Grace called herself on her cell phone, and it came up as Floric Residence, just in case you didn't think Grace was still the weirdest. She has her own number in her phone as Floric Residence.
Here's my pitch for...
This is how I watch the show, you guys.
Fair enough.
The wigs and the weird tech. This is totally...
Also,
like,
she's in college now?
Yeah, they said she's a college-age kid, but that's not right.
She didn't have to go to school. She's acting as Alicia's secretary.
I assumed it was because it was summer, but I might have just, like, fan-liked
who knows.
That. Because they, at some point when they said somebody's bail date, it was in August. So I assumed this was before that.
Oh, that makes sense.
Dave, you had a pitch?
Yeah, I just want to see the trio of Michael J. Fox's character.
Lewis.
David Lee.
Yep.
And the guy who I don't know who he's from, but I always think he's from Happy Days, but he's not. The old man.
Oh, he's from Mad About You.
Mad About You. Howard. Thank you. Yeah, Howard. I just want them sort of to be in some sort of half an hour show. Could be a webisode thing where it's just like their lives, you know, concurrent with what's going on. You know, home lives, you know, them going at lunch, because I think they haven't mined those characters for all they're worth yet.
Yeah.
And I also kind of want to see them all together at the same time for a bit.
Well, two things about, since you brought up those characters, I fail to believe that David Lee didn't know about the restriction on how much a household employee can inherit. Like, that's his whole job. I feel like he would know that. That was the end of the case of the week. But also,
that's a good law, by the way. That feels like that feels like somebody got royally fucked over. The law being, if you're taking care of an invalid,
you can't inherit more than $20,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But it gave us a moment with this lady, Luca Quinn, who's another bar attorney who I guess is maybe supposed to be the new, oh my God, I already forgot her name, Kalinda, in terms of being like Alicia's friend, because she hasn't had one in like seven seasons. And she seemed cool, but the Howard thing reminded me of Carrie's storyline, where he suddenly feels like he's being aged out before his time, and he has to do all the boring partner stuff instead of getting to hang out with all the cool associates. And then it ends with him getting hit on by an associate. And did anyone else think his reaction was too big under the circumstances? Because I thought that was weird.
Yeah,
that was a boy associate, I should add.
I mean, it was like, I don't think this show is that clueless about that. Like, I feel like that's going somewhere.
Yes, me too.
I believe in your particle, you were like, please let this be Carrie explores his bi nature.
That's my hope.
Oh, we can all dream.
What do you think, Adam?
I thought it was sort of in character, actually. I think that Carrie is kind of a douchebag. Mm. And also, like, because he's being so weird with the associates. Like, I think he might have reacted the same way if it were a woman.
Mm,
right? I'm totally retconning this badly. But, like, you know, I could see him reacting strangely, right? Because he's been sort of putting himself in this weird social situation with the associates because he feels weird.
Yeah.
And then it gets misread. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he does not want to be in a sexual harassment situation. So that's kind of how I read it. But,
yeah, I think that's fair.
Show choose to make it a gay panic moment and not just make it a female character?
Yeah.
Is a good question.
I mean, as I wrote, and as Sarah indicated, like, it just felt to me like they were treating it, he sort of played it as if that was the first time a man had ever hit on him, which, like, he's so cute.
Seems unlikely.
As if.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
With that much hair product, I'm sure it's happened before.
Well, that and, like, his age, you know, he's only in his probably, like, mid-30s at the most. Like, I'm sure he's been around, you know, gay people before and that they've been interested in him. So his, like, the sexual harassment thing is obviously a possibility too. So we'll see where that goes. I also thought it was weird and yet not weird that, like, you know, his discomfiture was not at all chalked up to Kalinda being gone at all. Like, you know, they were in a relationship and then she was suddenly gone, and yet, like, there's zero reference to that. Which I guess I should mention, I got into an interesting Twitter thing this week, speaking of The Good Wife, of the Archie Panjabi, Juliana Margulies mysterious feud.
My favorite subject.
And my thing was, I always assumed it was Juliana Margulies because she's the more famous one. Like, you would expect she's the one who's going to be a diva. And then reports started coming in from all over the internet of people being like, I can't give you details, but I hear it was Archie Panjabi that was the problem. And so here's what I've heard on Twitter, unattributed, that she was really mean to the crew. Her husband is her manager, which, red flag.
Ooh, bad.
And that people who have worked with Juliana Margulies, like, in, you know, and someone said they were like a publicist assistant or something, and said, like, she was super down to earth and really nice, and that she finally, like, she let it go as long as she could, and then she was like, okay, I can't work with this person anymore. She's crazy. Like, the word crazy came up multiple times about Archie Panjabi.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm not saying I have any firsthand knowledge of this. I'm saying this is what I heard this week. Thoughts?
Huh.
Hello, lawsuit.
Sorry. Because I know you guys have, both of you have like read a little bit about this feud. Were you coming at it from my perspective, or did you have a thought of like who was really at fault? Sarah.
I just assumed it was Margulies.
Yeah.
Always. Still not totally convinced it wasn't.
Yeah, you hate her.
Yeah, I really do. It's kind of unseemly. It's totally not that long. Actually, it has its basis in logic. Like the Carol character, basically assassination or smug assassination on ER. Mm-hmm. And she was not helping. Like, whatever. And then she gets to end up with Clooney, like, boo-hoo. And she was on The Sopranos very briefly. She was good in that. Like, I don't think she's bad at her job. I think she needs to moisturize better and eat more protein.
Yeah.
It's just a suggestion. Mm-hmm. She needs to ditch the wig. But there's something about just her, she has bitch face. And there's just something about the way she interacted with this story that I just assumed that she was at fault.
Well, Adam, you owe her an apology.
Adam?
Or do I?
I feel like the only person on Twitter who doesn't care about this story.
Oh, I thought you did. All right.
Well. I mean, because it's unavoidable. Your version sounds really plausible to me, actually, in as much as I followed it, which is not very much.
Right.
I really come down on the do your damn job side of things.
For sure.
You are both highly paid professionals. This is your job. You need to do it. And I don't understand why the show didn't just get rid of Kalinda, because whoever's fault it is, you cannot get rid of the good wife.
Right.
Sooner.
Yeah.
Like, buy her out of her contract if that's what it takes, because it really, like, it hurt the show. It became ridiculous. Or write her a storyline that worked better.
Yeah.
Where she didn't have to be on the phone all the time. Like, have them have a fight. Like, make it a thing.
Yeah.
Let them have a scene where they have a fight, which maybe they would have enjoyed. And then, like, be done with it.
Yeah, the Kings.
And, have her go off and do something else on the show, or have her off the show.
Yeah.
Because especially that last season, like, that was the one thing last season that was just awful. Like, everything Kalinda did, and then that stupid last scene.
Yes. And like, I think the rumor by that point had, like, reached critical mass where, like, everybody knew about it, and everyone was watching out for, like, trying to read the signs. I also blame Robert and Michelle King, like, the executive producers and creators of the show, for not, doing a better job of managing them if they were a problem, and B, giving really terrible interviews where they try and cover up what actually was happening, because no one is buying what they're selling, and they got to stop. And I guess that's it. Any other final thoughts?
I don't think so. I hope Michael J. Fox is on for the whole season. Do we know?
I don't know. I hope that, too. I hope I'm right about Carrie turning bi or discovering he is bi or kissing a boy. That's really all I want to see.
Yeah, no, I'm with that.
All right.
Thanks again.
Hey, all I did was vamp.
It was good vamping.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Oh, it's Mets o'clock. First of all, I'd like to note that that is the original Meet the Mets song that you're hearing, and it goes on forever. There's like a bunch of different verses and a bridge and all these vintage 60s things about bringing the kitties and your wife, and there's a key change. It's really quite a journey. I've been asked by listener Paul Bauer to talk lovingly about my baseball team, the New York Mets, who, as I record this, are poised to enter the postseason for the first time in 10 years. Mr. Bauer probably knows that when you talk lovingly about the Mets, you do it in the way that you talk lovingly about a drunk, crazy relative. It's been a very interesting season. The tears of Wilmer Flores talking blues. There's never been a dull moment, but it's nice to actually have something on the line when October rolls around. I don't know how long that's going to last. But to Paul, to all of my fellow Mets fans who survived Aaron Heilman, Generation K, starting center fielder Daryl Boston, the Backman versus Stromboli prize fight, and in memory of Ralph Kiner, let's go Mets. Paul, tweet at me or email me anytime if you're feeling blue and orange.
Nice. Hey, Mom.
We just finished watching Season 9, Episode 10 of Face Off.
That's right. And what was the challenge about today? It was, well, they had a foundation challenge. They had to do warrior makeups inspired by a weapon that they used in the olden days at field.
Okay, and what did they win if they won the foundation challenge?
They would get immunity.
And who was the winner?
It was Scott.
That's right. And then they moved right into the spotlight challenge.
Like, right into it.
And what was the spotlight challenge?
What they had to do is they had to create a character using the freak show.
Yep. And you learned what a freak show is. Do you want to tell us?
A freak show is where they go around and try to get people to go into the freak show. And if they're normal, okay, go out, have a good day. But if they're like, if they have tiny hands, they keep them in the freak show.
Well, usually people would not be able to get work because they look different. And so sometimes their last resort was to go on the freak show, and people would pay money for them to, so that they could look at them.
Yes, that's right.
And we looked at some pictures of some freak show people from back in the olden days.
Like lobster claw hands.
Yep, and elephantitis.
Elephantitis.
And you went, whoa. Jesus. Yeah. And what did you think of the challenge?
It was pretty cool, although I don't like it how they had a freak show, because it's pretty mean just because they don't get a job just because they look different. But luckily, now the circus is for family fun.
Yep. Not for animal fun, though.
No.
That's why it's better to go to something like Cirque du Soleil, where it's all people.
That's right.
Nothing bad ever happens and, there.
And who was your favorite makeup?
It was Stevie, and she got icicle-itis or something like that.
Icicle Irma.
Irma.
Yeah.
What's Irma?
It's a lady's name. I didn't really understand this concept because it is not a disease that I am familiar with. If you were going to dress up for Halloween and you had to choose one of the freak show examples that you saw today, which one would you want to dress up as?
Peacock Man, just because, you know, I like the peacock and it's really fun to me. So I would dress up as Peacock Woman.
Oh, is it also kind of because that was Ben and now you and Ben are buddies on Twitter?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Should we quickly explain that?
Sure.
I found Ben on Twitter and made him aware of last week's report.
Commentary.
With Liv's ringtone.
Ring, ring.
Oh. Believe in yourself, Ben. So we had a listen and...
He's
yeah,
a fan.
Yeah, so...
Our last challenge, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. And who was on the top this week?
Ben and Nora.
And Nora did?
Lobster Larry.
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 Yes, so he had lobster, I don't know, whiskers, whatever those things are called, antenna?
It's called tentacles.
Oh, no.
Okay. Coming out of his face, and he had lobster hands. And he was from the mob.
And V going home for lobster claws at dinner time.
Yeah, because she thought they looked so good. And Ben did the human peacock. And who is in the bottom?
It was Meg and Evan.
Yeah. And what did they do?
Oh. Meg did an inside-out Oscar, and Evan... did Moon Girl.
How did Meg's Inside Out Oscar go?
Terrible.
Yeah.
Well, kind of terrible, I guess. It's more like a flap skin blowout.
Yeah. He looked kind of like a skeleton and a monkey at the same time, but she didn't do a very good job of either.
And she didn't even see how terrible it was while you were doing it.
Mm-hmm. She didn't notice that she was doing a bad job, which isn't a good sign.
No, it's not.
And what did Evan do?
Evan.
What did Moon Girl look like?
She looked like she had chicken pox.
Mm-hmm.
and a big rock that she glued onto her head when she was in preschool. Like, meterers isn't like you're sticking a rock in your head. Like, be more useful with the meterer.
Meteor.
Yeah, like, do like some bruises, some cuts. Like, don't do a rock in the head.
Do you know what a meteor is?
Some moon dust and rock from outer space.
Do you think that if somebody got hit in the head with a meteor that they would survive?
No.
You're probably right.
It would damage the brain, and the brain and the heart is what keeps you going.
Mm-hmm. Who was eliminated?
It was Meg.
Yep. Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. After all, she is queen of the bottom three. I'm surprised that she got through that much bottoms.
That's true. It was about time for her to leave. And I think that they kept Evan because of previous work.
I mean, they're both pretty bad, so that's why. Well, kind of bad, at least.
So now we're down to six. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty.
What's nitty-gritty?
And down to the little basics. There's only a few left.
Only a couple till next season. And see you later.
It's time for The Blotter Presents with the music and the scariness.
Of Dave Without Notes. Hello, everyone. I'm here to talk about Prophet's Prey, which is a documentary that will be airing as we record this tonight. That's Sunday on Showtime. By the time you hear this, it should be available on Showtime anytime. It is about Warren Jeffs, the infamous fundamentalist LDS skeezball, who was finally apprehended while eating salad in 2007. His legal travails are still dragging on in various states because he's guilty of like kidnapping, child sex abuse, endangering minors, and a whole bunch of other treats in like four different states in the Southwest. He's horrible. And at one point, he's heard singing Blowin' in the Wind.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
If you think actual Bob Dylan is nasally up in his nasal, holy shit. And then you hear him singing this, and he's, like, standing in his jail cell, like, communing with a roll of toilet paper. I'm actually also in the middle of this book about these bombings that took place in Salt Lake City in the mid-80s because of, like, this guy who was forging documents going way back to, like, the Smith days of Mormonism. Mm. And that made me think that for The Blotter, I should do, like, what are the top four or five Mormon-related true crime properties, like Under the Banner of Heaven for by sure. John Krakauer, mm-hmm. who is in this documentary and is excellent and curses a lot. I feel like he's totally our people. And Executioner's Song, of course. And I don't know about the Lifetime movie starring Tony Goldwyn as Warren Jeffs, but this documentary, which is by the same writer and director who brought us West of Memphis, which was about the West Memphis Three. Her name is Amy Berg. This definitely deserves pride of place in whatever that list ends up being. It's an hour and 40 minutes, but it really sort of seems to fly by. There are a couple of really Grotsky moments, like a tape of one of his 200,000 wedding nights. That's, I mean, what they put in the Lifetime movie. I mean, it's a little hard to watch and listen to. Sorry that I just said hard. That's gross. You know what I mean? Difficult. I definitely recommend Prophet's Prey. It's fascinating, and I just continue to be like fascinated and baffled by people's adherence to this religion, but she got a lot of apostates cooperation. There's a private eye who did a lot of the legwork to track Jeffs down, who participates. The photos are amazing. Yes, highly recommend.
Yay! I am going to check that out. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Starting around the dial with The Daily Show, Trevor Noah took over from Jon Stewart last week, as you hear this, on the 28th of September. And I watched at least the first four episodes. I don't know how many more I'm going to keep watching. It's weird. I mean, there's still a huge amount of the same writers that wrote for Jon Stewart on staff. So some of it feels like he's doing a cover of Jon Stewart. Nick Reinwald Jones and I wrote about this on Monday night on previously.tv. But the way the places where he deviates and does his own thing just makes me like him less. I mean, I was kind of like not in the tank for him to begin with. Admittedly, I was like I was not on board with his hiring, and nothing that I've seen this week has really changed my mind about that. But it's a very weird experience to see someone take over after that much longer. Far weirder than Stephen Colbert taking over The Late Show, because it feels like a totally different kind of show. Whereas this feels like just a new guy sort of subbing for a while. Did anyone else watch it? I know, Sarah, you didn't. Adam, did you?
Nope.
Okay. Dave, you watched the first one.
I was going to ask you, though, if you think that this is going to settle down eventually, because this is just like first week, show-offy guests, crazy hype, because they know everyone's going to be watching, and then it's going to settle down into something more enjoyable for you? Or do you think this is what it is?
They didn't really have show-offy guests in their first week at all, which is also weird. I mean, they had Kevin Hart first, which he's a big star and has done several Comedy Central specials. But then the next night, it was like the CEO of a dating app, like this dating app for women that's spun off from Tinder, I guess. And then Chris Christie, and then I don't even remember who the fourth guest was. But maybe, I don't know. I mean, all of the other late night shows I really just record and watch when they have someone on that I enjoy. The Daily Show and the late Colbert Report were the only two that I would watch every night. And I don't know, maybe I'll have to downgrade it to only watch when someone I like is on. And it's a shame, because I really like a lot of the correspondents and I would enjoy, you know, getting to see more of them. But he is off-putting to me. I don't know if this is just my issue, but I don't know. We'll see. I guess I'll keep recording it for now.
Just to clarify my note, I didn't watch the old one either. I have nothing against him.
Yeah, neither did I.
No, I know
all those shows I sort of watch via Twitter, right? When there's a clip that... And it usually, like, someone has to share it 3 or 4 times before I'm like, oh, I guess I should watch that.
Yeah.
There's, like, a critical mass thing for me. And certainly nothing that happened this week did that.
No.
Like, I saw a bunch of reviews of the first episode.
Yeah.
And not that he has to do that in the first week. I get it. Like, I'm not saying, like, oh, you didn't go viral in the first week. You're done.
No.
But there was nothing that made me want to check in.
Yeah, the closest thing was Jordan Klepper did a report about, like, you know, how overcovered pumpkin seasoning is at this time of year, which it is, which was funny, but, like, you know, I don't know, that's not much to hang your hat on in terms of the first week of your new show. So it feels,
well, it's a
kind
little
of
morning showy too. No, I mean,
yeah,
I
mean,
they used to do that kind of stuff, but
yes, but that's what it was, you know, that's what the report was about. It was like how morning shows are overcovering this thing, but anyway, whatever. I don't know. It was
all right. You're going around circles. Adam.
Hi. Once Upon a Time, which I am covering this season for previously.tv, just started its 5th season. As we record, there has been 1 episode. By the time you hear this, there will have been a 2nd, and my post will be up on previously.tv about it. This is a really weird show, like, in the TV landscape, in that I feel like it is hugely popular, it's really expensive, and it's in its 5th season, and I hardly know anybody who watches it, including the 3 of you. But it's not like NCIS or CSI or any of those shows. Like, I feel like it skews younger. I just, like, I don't have a lot of friends who watch it, but it feels like it
really
should.
I think this is a Walmart crowd show.
I guess it's that, right? Yeah. I feel like there should be more crossover with, like, Doctor Who, Vampire Diaries, Sleepy Hollow.
I mean, God bless you if you like it. I'm not calling you a Walmart person.
No.
I'm just saying, I think that's the silent majority of.
Yeah, totally. I watch a lot of garbage. I'm not offended by anything.
It might be that you don't know a lot of people who have kids that would be the age that they'd be interested, because Leah watches it with my niece.
Interesting. Because I don't think of it as a kid show. I mean, it's definitely a family show. It's on Sundays at 8, right? Mm-hmm. So it's occupying a sort of family slot. And it's a Disney show, right? So it's that old sort of ABC. You know, even before ABC was Disney, I think they always used to have, like, that Sunday night family slot at, like, 7 or 8. But I love it, and I love it because it's, like, crazy pants. I feel like it did get a lot of attention before it started, because they were like, they're doing this Disney, you know, Disney owns the rights to all these fairy tales, they're going to do this sort of fractured fairy tale thing. And it was from the producers of Lost, some of the producers of Lost. So it got all this press, and then it was really, really boring. And I don't quite know why I kept watching it, but I did. And then in season two, they realized that taking themselves seriously was the biggest mistake they could have made. I assume, I don't know, I wasn't there. But it seems that that's what happened, because in season two, it got totally wackadoo. And this is why I love it. It's really formulaic. If I have... The biggest problem I had with the season premiere was that they're really married to their structure, to the point that they're repeating themselves in some really annoying ways. But, like, everyone who's on it seems to understand the tone. There's a real campiness to it that I enjoy. The costumes are insane. And, like, they all seem like they're having fun.
Yeah.
Which never happened, for example, on Lost. And
what's going on with Jennifer Goodwin's hair, though?
No, why, I don't know. Why is that's a wig for sure.
That.
She's actually, I feel like Tara sent me this once. Like, she, I think, is on record in interviews as being like, I only ever want to wear wigs on television because doing your hair is a pain in the ass.
Yep.
So, yeah. So she wears a wig in both the real world and the fairy tale world. Whereas most people only wear them in the fairy tale world.
Mm.
She got pregnant in real life, and so she was, like, sidelined for a long time, and her character, I think, has gotten really mopey and annoying as a result. I mean, not because she was pregnant, but because they didn't give her anything to do. but Emma, played by Jennifer Morrison, who was sort of by design the wet blanket of the show, is the season's villain, so she's getting to have fun for the first time. Yeah, she's been cursed. It's not worth explaining, but she's, it's just not. She's getting to, you know, camp it up, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a tough show to jump into. I'm not sure I could recommend, like, starting now, but it is on Netflix. Skip season one. You can read my post about it on Previously, and yeah, check it out.
Woo!
So Serial, the podcast, is apparently going to become a TV show. Tara and I talked a little bit about this on IN last week. I don't get it.
Yeah.
The timing is interesting because you can pretty much see, like, the skeleton of how long it took to make the deal. That Serial was, like, the hottest thing in the world.
In December.
Like, November, December of last year, they decided they would try to do some kind of either This American Life or, like, basically the Howard Stern show, where they just film them recording. I don't understand what this adds, but it's interesting that this deal is announced now, that they finally hammered out all the details ahead of season two of Serial, the podcast. And now it's kind of like, well, we've gone through, like, the backlash. We're kind of in a, like, middle place. I, as someone who, you know, is a true crime blog publisher, is thrilled that Serial was that popular, but also, like, this isn't the first worthwhile true crime property in the world, and I'm kind of like, it's really close to being overexposed to a, like, irretrievable degree. I don't know what you guys think. Okay.
Sorry.
So much of what I like about Serial is, like, what a great audio program it is. Like, I'm not really interested in it jumping mediums, personally.
I'm not either.
It's not cinematic. Like, I don't know what we'd be watching in terms of watching it be made. But also, sorry, I already have caught out. Sorry if you said this already, Sarah. But it's brought to us by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who are the people behind the Lego Movie and the 21 Jump Street movies. Yeah, they're producing it.
Yeah, or at what least the hell? That's the other thing.
Such a weird partnership. I don't get what the Last Man on Earth people have in common with Serial. But people will watch it probably. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I'll definitely watch it, but I watch a lot of true crime programming. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times my husband Dan and I have looked at each other and been like, this should just be, like, a radio show, because there's so much visual filler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our shorthand for this is typing, because they're always showing some cop with his, like, state ID on, just, like, typing and frowning in his monitor, and it's like, do we need to see this? Like, why don't we just have the VO, and then he'll talk for a while? I don't see what it adds. That's all.
It'll also be interesting if season two comes back and people aren't as engaged in the story as they were in the Adnan story, and how that'll affect the show. Like if it'll be a thing where like, oh, now we're not doing that anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I can't remember. Do we know where it's going to be, or it's just going to be a show?
I don't remember either. Oh, Fox 21. So I don't know, maybe Fox, but that's the production company, not necessarily the network.
Right. Well, all right. Well, I guess we'll see.
Yep.
Quickly, Manhattan is back soon. Watch the first episode of the second season, and I won't spoil anything except to say, on a casting note, William Peterson is in the cast now.
He sure is.
Game to play when you're watching is who in the cast is no longer on the show so they can afford William Peterson.
Oh, no.
Because
there is a lot of...
They went to the store and never came back. Things going on.
There's a really funny. I don't want to spoil it either. But there was one really funny shot where it's like, really?
Yeah.
Not even for 2 minutes could that character be on screen. Yeah. Okay.
So if you've been watching Manhattan, a little bonus in the first episode, which is tightening the belt, who wins, who loses.
But it's good.
Yeah, I know it's good.
I'm excited for the new season.
All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Adam, what do you got?
Okay, well, when you guys did Star Trek The Next Generation Nonak a while back, I was shocked to realize no one had submitted an original Star Trek for the canon yet, so I'm here to rectify that. Even though it went off the air 6 years before I was born, I grew up with Star Trek in syndicated reruns, and then later the original cast movies hit at exactly the right age for me. So I appreciate The Next Generation and the other spinoffs. I certainly watch them, but the original series will always be my Star Trek. And I realize there are people who take this show very seriously, but for me, what makes it great is an almost perfect balance between it being actually good, which it often is, and it being completely ridiculous. It is legitimately a science fiction classic and a camp classic, and I think that that is perfectly represented by Season 2, Episode 4, Mirror, Mirror, a.k.a. the one where Spock has a beard. So this episode begins mid-scene as Kirk negotiates to mine dilithium crystals on a planet whose people believe in total peace, so they won't let the Federation have them if there's any chance they could be used for weapons. A magnetic storm cuts the talk short, and Kirk, Uhura, McCoy, and Scotty have to beam up right away, but not before Kirk leaves the Hulkans with one last thought in our first clip.
Captain, you do have the might to force the crystals from us, of course. But we won't. Consider that.
He smirks the smirkiest Shatner smirk, and it's amazing. They beam up, and something is clearly wrong. Spock has a beard, everyone's costumes are different. But Kirk plays along and reports that there's been no change in the Hulkans' position. And so Spock orders standard procedure, a phaser barrage on the planet. Spock then yells at the transporter technician for not compensating for the storm enough and orders him to hand over his agonizer, a small device everyone carries, which Spock pins to the red shirt's chest, causing him agony. Seems like a lot of effort because everybody carries guns, but it's very dramatic.
But what I like about the agonizer is you really get what's on the tin.
Yeah. It's very, very
It also makes a beautiful brooch.
It does. It sets up the world very well.
It comes in all the standard iPod colors.
Oh, Apple should do that.
Ingrateful. Okay.
New rose gold agonizer.
After the iconic opening credits, Kirk suggests that the landing party go to sickbay to get checked out after the rough beam up and orders Spock to have the transporter circuits checked. After everyone they pass gives them a not quite Nazi salute, and I'll let Kirk chatsplain what's going on.
What is this? Everything's all messed up, changed around, out of place.
Captain, what's happened?
Oh, not everything. That spot. I spilled acid there a year ago. Jim, what in blazes is...
I don't know. It's our Enterprise. But it isn't. Maybe...
Maybe what, Captain?
Any of you feel dizzy when we were in the transporter beam?
Yes.
When we first materialized?
I did.
It happened twice. First, we were in our own transporter chamber, and then we faded. And then, when we finally materialized, we were here, wherever this is.
Captain... Transporter chief mentioned a surge of power. The transporter lock might have been affected by the ion storm, and we just materialized somewhere else.
Yes, here. Not our universe. Not our ship. Something
parallel.
Put it together, Kurt.
Parallel universe.
Yep.
Coexisting with ours on another dimensional plane. Everything's duplicated. Almost. Another Enterprise? Spock with a beard?
Another Captain Kirk, another Dr. McCoy, and...
An exchange. Another... If we're here, then our counterparts must have been transporting up at the exact same time. Similar storms on both universes disrupted the circuits. We're here, and they're... on our Enterprise.
Ta-da! I love that Spock with a beard is on his list, like, before everyone's a fascist. and I'd like to think that in 1968, the concept of parallel universes was a little bit more foreign, but they definitely say everything three times. But on the bridge, Sulu sexually harasses Uhura so that we know that he's bad. He also has a scar so that we know that he's bad. She holds her own really well, but Kirk arrives before it can escalate. She stage whispers that he's ordered to annihilate the Hulkans unless they comply. But instead, Kirk announces that he's going to try a diplomatic approach one last time, much to Spock's chagrin. He plays it off as very mean diplomacy, though. And that's our next clip.
It is useless to resist us.
We do not resist you.
You have 12 hours to consider your position.
12 years, Captain Kirk, or 12,000. We are ethically compelled to deny your demand for our dilithium crystals. For you would use their power to destroy.
We will level your planet and take what we want. That is destruction. You will die as a race.
To preserve what we are.
We will not argue. 12 hours, no more. Close communications. Turn phases off.
I see.
12 hours, Captain. That is unprecedented.
I shall be in my quarters. Lieutenant Uhura, have Dr. McCoy and Mr. Scott meet me there.
Chekhov pushes some buttons on his control panel.
Captain, placed yourself in a most grave position. This conduct must be reported.
You're at liberty to do so, Mr. Spock.
Here's an app idea. The Star Trek Enter and Exit a Room app, where you go into the room and it, you know, with proximity or GPS, it just starts playing that music for you.
I'll buy it.
Totally. So Chekhov also leaves the bridge and rides the lift with Kirk, and when they get off, Kirk is ambushed. In this universe, everyone moves up in rank when someone dies, and so assassinations happen pretty regularly. Kirk disobeying orders was the cue that Chekhov needed for his crew of mutineers. A ridiculous fight scene ensues, but one of Chekhov's men turns on him, hoping for even better treatment from Kirk. He gets a punch in the jaw instead, and Chekhov gets taken to the booth. Kirk somehow gets the computer to spit out a procedure for using the ship's engines to recreate the conditions that made the switch, and we get this classic bit of Star Trek dialogue.
Scotty, can you do it?
Not by myself. I'll need help. You'll be too conspicuous.
I'm a doctor, not an engineer.
No, you're an engineer.
I'll have to tap the power we need from the warp engines and balance it for the four of us.
Good.
We have to lay in the automatic transporter setting. But when we interrupt engine circuits to tie the power increase into the transporter, it'll show up on Sulu's security board. Of course, we'll only need a second.
I'll tell Uhura to create a diversion to distract Sulu's attention. At your signal. We better get back to our posts. Keep me advised. Jim, if we're here, what do you suppose our counterparts are doing back in our universe?
On our Enterprise.
I order you! Let me go!
You traitorous pig. I'll hang you up by your Vulcan ears. I'll have you all executed.
I think not. Your authority on this ship is extremely limited, Captain. The four of you will remain here in the brig and in custody until I discover how to return you to wherever it is you belong.
Has the whole galaxy gone crazy? What kind of a uniform is this? Where's your beard? What's going on? Where's my personal guard?
Where's your beard?
I can answer none of your questions at this time.
All right, Spock.
Whatever your game is, I'll play it. You want credits, I'll give them to you. You'll be a rich man. A commander of your own? I can swing that too.
Apparently, some kind of transposition has taken place. I find it extremely interesting.
Spock, what is it that will buy you? Power?
Fascinating.
I wish this were a video podcast just so that you all could see Shatner as Evil Kirk. It's like Shatner at his Shatneriest.
Oh, yeah.
And Evil McCoy is exactly the same. He's just hanging out. He doesn't care. but generally, the Evil Twins aren't able to play it cool for even a second, and they're thrown in the brig. Back on the Evil Enterprise, Spock tells Kirk that he's glad Chekov failed because he doesn't want to be captain, and he's happy to be a lesser target. Kirk learns that the booth was short for Agony Booth, where Chekov is supposed to be tortured until he dies, but Kirk orders him released. Spock seems suspicious of Kirk's behavior and doesn't want to see his own position jeopardized by it. Scotty and McCoy drug a guard and get to sabotaging the transporter to send them back, and Kirk finds a woman asleep in his quarters who is clearly his girlfriend. She figures his strange actions must be in service of some larger power grab, and she's turned on by it. Spock interrupts with a message that Starfleet Command has ordered him to give Kirk until dawn to destroy the Hawkins and to kill him if he doesn't. Kirk's girlfriend suggests activating the Tantalus field so they can monitor Spock and then provide some helpful exposition in the next clip.
I hate this thing.
It's not that bad.
Of course not. It made you captain. How many enemies have you simply wiped out of existence by the touch of a button? 50? 100? Now, I always thought that was funny. The great, powerful Captain Kirk, who owes everything to some unknown alien scientist and a plundered laboratory.
Well, if you don't take advantage of your opportunities,
you don't rise to the command of a starship. Or even higher. That magnificent mind of his. But it can't protect him from this. I press it, and he dies. Now. You really mean it? It doesn't matter. If Spock fails his order, he'll be killed anyway.
I'll see to it that the circumstances of his failure will clear him.
You're not even afraid of Starfleet Command. Can your scheme bring you that much power so quickly? And what about me? How does Marlena fit in?
George is getting upset.
Yep, so even in an alternate universe, Kirk is going to get laid.
Before you move on, point of order. This alternate universe is the Empire, but she just refers to Starfleet Command.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a little flub.
Well, I think it's... I'm going to get so nerdy. There's a Starfleet and a Federation, so I think it's Starfleet and the Empire.
Oh.
Okay. Like, it's Starfleet is, like, under the Empire or the Federation.
All right.
You've been out nerded.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's the tip of the spear, is that what you're saying?
I think so. Okay. Sorry. Yikes. So Kirk lets Scotty know that they have a time limit before Spock kills him, and Scotty explains they actually have even less time than that before the link between the universe closes forever because of science. He says he needs about 10 minutes to be ready, and Kirk says he needs about 10 minutes with Marlena. No, he doesn't really. But she does come out of the bedroom in the most amazing caftan, which actually is more concealing than her uniform was.
Thank you.
And she tells Kirk that their relationship has gone stale, and she wants to be transferred because she has grown accustomed to being a captain's woman. Kirk tells her she can be anything she wants to be, and then kisses her, which kind of undercuts the feminist message. And he also reassures her that she is the captain's woman until he says you're not, which also undercuts the feminist message. But when in evil Rome, you do what you have to do. He leaves, and she turns on the Tantalus field to watch after him. And he calls Uhura and tells her to distract Sulu from his console so he doesn't get alerted to what Scotty's up to. And that's our next clip.
You aren't very persistent, Mr. Sulu. The game has rules. You're ignoring them. I protest, and you come back. You didn't come back.
Now you're making sense.
I was getting bored. Of course, this isn't the time.
Any time's a good time.
It stops.
I'm afraid I changed my mind again.
You take a lot of chances, Lieutenant.
So do you, mister. So do you.
Oh, Nichelle Nichols is the best. Spock finds Kirk messing with the transporter controls and orders him to join the others in sickbay. Another hilarious fight scene ensues, and Kirk knocks Spock out. McCoy insists on treating Spock, which gives Sulu time to show up and Bond villain his plan to kill everyone, making it look like Kirk and Spock killed each other. But Marlena uses the Tantalus field to kill Sulu's men, and Kirk knocks Sulu out. McCoy tells the others he'll meet them in the transporter room, but once they leave, Spock comes too and mind melds with McCoy to learn the truth. Marlena is waiting for them in the transporter room and wants to come with, but the power is balanced only for four, and there's something about how a generator is not working, so someone will have to run it manually, of course. Spock arrives with McCoy and offers to run the transporter. And we have one more clip. We have two more clips, but there's one.
You're a man of integrity in both universes, Mr. Spock.
You must return to your universe. I must have my captain back. I shall operate the transporter. You have 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
For that time, I have something to say. How long before the Hulkan prediction of collective revolt is realized?
Approximately 240 years.
The inevitable outcome?
The Empire shall be overthrown, of course.
The logic of waste, Mr. Spock. The waste of lives, potential, resources, time. I submit to you that your empire is illogical because it cannot endure. I submit that you are illogical to be a willing part of it.
You have 1 minute and 23 seconds.
If change is inevitable, predictable, beneficial, doesn't logic demand that you be a part of it?
One man cannot summon the future.
But one man can change the present. Be the captain of this enterprise, Mr. Spock. Find a logical reason for sparing the Hulkans and make it stick. Push till it gives. You can defend yourself better than any man in the fleet. Captain, get in the chamber!
That's what she said.
Come on, Spock.
A man must also have the power.
That's what she
said. In my cabin is a device that will make you invincible.
Indeed.
What will it be? Past or future? Tyranny or freedom? It's up to you.
Kiss.
It is time. In every revolution, there's one man with a vision.
Captain Kirk, I shall consider it.
Back on the Good Enterprise, we get a classic final Kirk Spock McCoy scene on the bridge, and our last clip.
What I don't understand is how you were able to identify our counterpart so quickly.
It was far easier for you as civilized men to behave like barbarians than it was for them as barbarians to behave like civilized men. I assume they returned to their enterprise at the same time you appeared here.
Probably. However, that Jim Kirk will find a few changes if I read my spots correctly.
Jim, I think I liked him with a beard better. Gave him character. Of course, almost any change would be a distinct improvement.
What worries me is the easy way his counterpart fitted into that other universe. I always thought Spock was a bit of a pirate at heart.
Indeed, gentlemen. May I point out that I had an opportunity to observe your counterparts here quite closely. They were brutal, savage, unprincipled, uncivilized, treacherous. In every way, splendid examples of Homo sapiens, the very flower of humanity. I found them quite refreshing.
I'm not sure, but I think we've been insulted.
I'm sure.
And as a final button, a newly assigned lieutenant arrives on the bridge with something for Kirk to sign. It's Marlena, of course, and Kirk is definitely going to fuck her. Because sexual harassment, always funny. So that's the episode. I think it is a perfect representation of this series, a sort of fascinating slice of 1968. Pretty funny, but also like pretty good. And that's my pitch.
Shall I go first?
Sure.
it's easy to forget, you know, because there's been so many copies of this episode since that, you know, like, I mean, it's not the very first. I think there might have been a Twilight Zone episode that was sort of like, you know, there's two Earths and they're, you know, one's sort of, you know, different kind of thing. But, you know, this was pretty, you know, interesting, pretty new for when it came out. And even though today it feels like it moves slowly, you know, it's still, as you say, like a classic piece of sci-fi. The music, I really want them to rescore some like next generation episodes with the music found in these originals because it's amazing. I remember playing the Star Trek video game for the Commodore 64. It might have been like not a licensed thing. It might have been something somebody made. But whenever anything went wrong, it would like that music. So that brought back some great memories. Kirk as evil Kirk really like makes you feel sad for his portrayal of regular Kirk. Like, you know, they should have evil Kirked up regular Kirk because as hammy as he is, like it takes it to like 14. It is amazing. And that sort of like smash cut to the evil Kirk on the good Enterprise is like a pretty modern, like it seemed like really fresh.
Right. And it's, I remembered more of it. Like before I rewatched it, I thought there were more scenes back on the regular Enterprise, but that's it. That's all we get is the entirety of the clip.
Yeah.
That we heard.
And
which is perfect.
I believe, no, don't quote me on this because it's been a while, but I believe this storyline is extended in Deep Space Nine that they go back somehow to this alternate universe and the Empire is even crazier and bigger and more Nazi-ish and everybody's screwing everybody.
I gotta find that. I didn't watch Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I think the main villain is Kara, I think, if memory serves, and like she's always trying to get Captain Sisko into sack. nice. I might be misremembering that. But yeah, it's a continuation of this, and I think they might even like explain, like this episode might even like have a passing mention too, I think. So anyways, so a little bit of Trek trivia for you. Google it, people. Tara.
Actually, Sarah, why don't you go next?
Okay. I am glad that, Adam, that you made the point that this show somehow manages to be both good and so bad it's good at the same time.
Yeah.
Most of the time. This is really like, this is absolutely like, a quintessential, like the quintessential Star Trek. It's an episode everyone remembers. It's like sort of an interesting, like premise. And yet there's like some typical shut delivery. And there's Nimoy and, what's his name?
DeForest Kelly
sort of like really having a lot of fun with their characters who like don't get along. And DeForest Kelly, as the more time goes by, the more I love his portrayal of that character. Yeah. He's just so like grouchy and so much like me that he's like, I don't want to do this. You're an idiot. Like, always so over it. Especially in
why
the movies.
Why is he even there? Like, why is he
yeah,
on
he's like
the
wearing some
place?
Ridiculous what? Turtleneck. He's like, I hate everything. Fucking alimony. He's great. It's, I guess it's like a little slow, but given that A, I've seen it before several times and I know what's going to happen, and B, there's just like more of it. Like, we're used to a 39-minute running time now. This is like 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did repeat things a lot, but it, you know, like, just when you're like, oh my God, get on with it, move on, there would be this like unbelievably Broadway fight call. The fight choreography is the best. And the orchestra, like the soundtrack, is so shocked all the time and so caffeinated and excited about everything that's happening. And Sulu is completely unconvincing. Like, evil Sulu is just like, I think he was drunk.
Yeah.
I mean,
and is that scar made of like masking tape?
It was
like a silly putty.
Yeah.
God.
And
it really
has like
I was
so
like,
much pancake on to like cover the
oh,
scar.
Oh, God. It was
so
awful.
Strange.
Speaking of, I would like to see what Liv thinks of that as a face off auxiliary report. I enjoyed this. My husband wandered into my office and was still like standing next to my desk like 20 minutes later watching it. Perfect exemplar of the series and just a fun way to spend an hour.
Well, guys, I'm going to have to take your word for it because this is the first episode of original Star Trek I ever saw.
What?
That can't be true.
It is true. It is true.
Really?
Yep.
Hmm.
Like, at all? Ever. You never, like, saw it?
I'm so shocked that my audio just cut out.
We're going to have to do, like, a top 10 or something.
Okay.
No.
Great.
Okay.
Or not.
This was... I mean, I hear what you guys are saying, and Marlena's end of the episode wig assemblage. There's like five wigs braided together on her head. It's amazing. Almost enough for me to want to vote it in. Like I hear what you guys are saying, but this is not my jam. The whole thing on the evil star, the evil Enterprise about how people rise up through the ranks is like. And the salute and everything. Like, I thought it was interesting how it was more directly Roman. I mean, it was funny when you said, when in evil Rome, because it really is, like, it feels very much like it was modeled specifically on the politics of, like, the olden days. But this didn't do it for me. But I can appreciate you guys, all of your... I understand that this is seminal, so I will defer. I guess. That's what she said.
What Marlena said.
So this top 10 Star Trek TOS series is hereby canceled at Fort Awesome. Got it. All right.
Well, I mean.
That's fine. Hey, Tara, look, there's no right or wrong answers here.
Tara, have you seen any of the movies, or is this like your first ever?
Of the original cast, I've seen Wrath of Khan.
You've seen Next Generation too,
and I've seen lots of Next Generation and like
bits original cast.
The other ones, Wrath of Khan. I've probably seen other ones too, but that's the only one I really remember.
You've seen
obviously.
The best one. You've
it's the best Khan. One, yeah.
Which I still cry at the end of.
Oh, how can you not?
Exactly.
I saw it when I was a kid. I was like in grade 2, and I saw it in the theater. Not appropriate for a 7-year-old.
Yeah, wow, no.
But
for a bunch of reasons.
Yep.
Also, just to wrap it up, let's not forget that this sort of cemented the goatee as the evil go-to in pop culture. Like, you know, Satan was around before Spock, but really Spock is the one that really, like, you know, TV and movies, that became
from
you know,
Spock
immediate
to
shorthand.
Garth. Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Tara, what say you?
I get that it's important, but I like it. It didn't make me want to watch more of the show, so I'm sorry. Nay, but thank you,
Sarah.
Congratulations, my birthday mate, William Shatner. It's a yes for me.
Yeah, a yes for me too.
I figured.
Star Trek Season 2, Episode 4, Mirror, Mirror, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon. Da-da!
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, everybody, it's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Smithers from The Simpsons, a show that is still on and producing new episodes. And apparently this season, Smithers gets to come out, finally, the worst kept closeted person in history, gets to stop being in the closet. So that's good news for him, the fictional character.
Wow, I thought that actually happened like 10 years ago.
I know.
Me too.
Apparently not.
Better late than never. I have our loser this week. I changed it at the last minute. It's Keith Hernandez. Here's why. A little fold-in from our Mets spot earlier, but Seinfeld joined the regular guys in the booth of the Mets game yesterday. And was saying that it was really a shame that the local broadcasters don't cover the postseason games. It goes to like different networks and it's a different coverage team. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like that wrong with most of the coverage teams, but Mets fans know that our TV booth is probably the best in the business. And it's really a pity that we don't get to hear Keith Hernandez and that they don't have the local teams cover it in the postseason because Keith, there's a whole drinking game. It's aww. Hilarious. He says fundies a lot. Come on.
Awesome.
That brings an interesting question to the table, which is this. Do you know what time it is?
It's the final
time
game.
To drinking game.
Time to chase box beer.
You're all wrong. Or you're all right. It's game time.
Yay!
Thank you. my. All right, this is the 13th game time of the season, the most you can have.
Lucky.
Oh, my God.
The standings are Sarah, 4 points. Tara, 4 points. Value guess, 4 points. The season ends when somebody hits 5 points. So we will crown a victor today. The season will end. Who will win? Who will lose? Very exciting. Today's game time comes from one Mr. Rob Hartman.
Oh, good.
Yay!
Who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of his choosing. The game is simply called Food and Drink.
Okay.
Food and Drink. I am going to read you a sentence, and you have to tell me the food or drink and show amalgam I am talking about.
Okay.
All right.
Do you have an example?
I don't.
Okay.
So we're just going to go right into it, but I'll give the first person lots of time.
Okay.
All right. So that's it. We got three rounds, lots of questions, and a tiebreaker if we need it.
Did Rob Hartman know when he created this game that it was going to be the tie-breaking final game time?
It's been sitting in my inbox for about a month
or so. Oh, boy.
So, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready to play food and drink?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's see who's going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So that means Adam, Sarah, Tara is our order. Here we go. All right, Adam. So remember, the answer is some sort of food show amalgam.
Okay.
Sydney. I'll give you lots of time.
Okay.
Sydney might give you a flat glass of this if your stomach's upset. Sydney might give you a flat glass of this if your stomach's upset.
Ginger Alias. I love this game.
1 point.
That's good for 1 point.
Okay.
Yep. Just 1 point for everything. No hints.
Right? Got it.
Sarah. Meredith might sip on a cup of this, pondering her ridiculous love life.
Meredith might sip on a cup of this. Earl Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah. Wasn't expecting it. Yep, there we go.
Would you have also accepted Grey Goose or a Greyhound?
No.
Okay.
If you ask Alyssa Milano for a Sprite, she'll just give you this. If you ask Alyssa Milano for a Sprite, she'll just give you this. Talk it out, Tara.
Well, I'm trying to think of Sierra Mistresses.
Wow, nice pull.
Gina
Rodriguez.
I was
like, who's the Bosco?
Gina Rodriguez will ask if you prefer Tanqueray or Bombay Sapphire. This is Adam.
Yeah, Gina Rodriguez. Those are gins.
Gina Rodriguez will ask you if you prefer Tanqueray or Bombay Sapphire. Talk it out, Adam.
I'm not sure who that is. Yeah, I don't know.
Jane the Virgin and Tonic?
Jane the Virgin and Tonic.
I got stuck on Martini. Yeah, okay.
Massachusetts.
No.
Massachusetts witches might set up a stand to sell glasses of this.
Massachusetts witches might. Okay. Might set up a stand. It can't be this easy. Say lemonade?
Piper might need a cup of this when she's hungover.
Orange is the new black coffee?
Correct. Back to Adam. Jack McCoy always has a little paper cup of this with his deli sandwiches.
Coleslaw in order.
I hope Rob Hartman can hear how delighted we all are by this game.
Radar O'Reilly is Irish, so of course he loves a big scoop of these.
Mashed potatoes?
When your sandwich is dry, a man in the limousine pulls up and says, "Hug it out, bitch."
Grey Poop Entourage.
Clones love Southern food.
Orphan black.
You're so close.
I know. Orphan blackened something. Orphan black eyed peas.
Yeah, you got it. I was going to buzz you because it sounded like you're off on the wrong trail, but you came back. You came back to the trailhead. You took the right path. All right.
Sarah.
This is ending our... This is your last question of this round, Sarah. Aw. The Winchester brothers will dish you up some of this bloody-looking stuff, maybe with a grilled cheese sandwich. I will just say picked right.
Can I hear the clue again, please?
The Winchester brothers will dish you up some of this bloody-looking stuff, maybe with a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, tomato supernatural?
Correct. All right, this is the end of this round.
Okay.
Don Draper knows that this is just made of tripe. I had no idea this was a thing.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anybody want to take a guess at this?
Nope.
It sounded like Sarah knew it. Oh, okay.
Mad Mentos?
Pardon?
Mad Mentos? I know that's not right.
No, Mad Menudo.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, sure. Right. Okay.
All right, so that is round one.
All right, Adam and I are tied with 3 each. Sarah in the lead with 4.
All right, so now we're on to round 2. Bigger plates, 30 questions.
Okay.
To Adam, Ichabod Crane loves this Chinese noodle dish.
Sleepy Hollow, Maine.
Instantaneous.
When they're on, they're really on.
Sarah, 3 layers, cut into quarters, spear with a toothpick, add NASA.
3 layers.
Cut into quarters. Spear with a toothpick, add NASA or NASA.
NASA?
National Aeronautic Space.
Yes, okay. Just wanted to make sure that it was the same.
Yes.
NASA.
Yeah, not to the Bahamas.
And now my mind is like emptied of space shows or... it's got to be a BLT, but it's I don't know what the show is. Shit.
Astronaut Wives Club Sandwich?
Yep.
Astronaut Club Sandwich.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Nucky's favorite potato dumplings. Nucky's favorite potato dumplings. Talk it out. Come on.
Okay. Boardwalk Empire and Boardwalk Empire Rogies.
Okay. Boardwalk Empire Rogies. Yes.
Not really how you say that word, but okay.
Yeah. Empire Rogies.
Pierogies.
Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Did Jarrett really lose weight eating these, or did Julia Ormond cast a spell on him?
Sorry, you cut out. Can you repeat the clue, please?
Did Jarrett really lose weight eating these, or did Julia Ormond cast a spell on him?
The Subway sandwiches of East End? Wow.
Nice.
Correct. JR will serve you up a big slice of this... here, Italian dish. JR will serve you up a big slice of this here Italian dish.
De lasagna?
Correct. I am having a long-distance relationship with the Gorton's fisherman. At least I think I am.
Catfish sticks?
Catfish sticks, correct.
But I think you might have skipped one, because if that was 19, we should only be on question 18, because there are 3 of us.
Oh, you know what? It's because I...
It doesn't matter. Just as long as you didn't skip one.
Uh, Oh, no, you know what? Yeah, no, we're good.
Okay.
This is actually 19.
All right.
Okay.
Actual 19 for Adam.
actual 19. Linda Carter has satin tights and large tubes of pasta stuffed with creamy filling.
Is that me?
Ooh.
Yes, yeah. That's for you.
Gross.
Linda Carter has satin tights and large tubes of pasta filled with creamy filling.
Shit. It's Wonder Woman.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Wonder Woman Manicotti.
Wonder Woman Manicotti. Wow. Excellent. All right.
For Sarah.
Yeah. Superhuman powers go great with horseradish.
Superhuman powers.
This is a tough one. This is a good one. Yeah.
Go great with horseradish.
Yeah.
Superhuman powers go great with horseradish. What do you mean with horseradish? Sauerkraut, shrimp. It's not going to be shrimp. Buffy the Vampire Slayer worst?
Is it here roast beef?
It is here roast beef, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Heroes!
Glum Seattle detectives enjoy these noodles, maybe with clam sauce.
The Kill Linguini.
Oi, governor, we'd like some humor with some sausages and potatoes.
For Adam.
Yeah. I got nothing. Anything.
Comedy Bang Bangers and MASH.
Oh, of course.
Never.
All right, Sarah. Tyra was rooting for this Easter baked meat. We were all rooting for it.
Hey, America's Next Top Model.
Tom Selleck and his clan doesn't go for your fancy breaded French dishes.
Cordon Bleu Bloods? Chicken Cordon Bleu Bloods?
Yeah, chicken Cordon Bleu Bloods. Excuse me. Tia Leone, make sure to get this on the side when she goes out for Mexican. Yeah. Tia Leone makes sure to get this on the side when she goes out for Mexican, Adam.
The hell is she on?
Yeah, what was she on? Do you know anything that she was on?
Nothing that I can make into guacamole. no. No.
Anybody?
No.
Madam Secretary
Terry Fried Beans.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm the one.
All right.
For Sarah.
Yeah. Surely Dr. Lecter would never serve this, especially on white bread.
Hannah Bologna?
Yep. Housewife Lisa might serve you this French chicken dish at her restaurant if her staff can stop screwing each other long enough.
Say the first part of it again.
Housewife Lisa might serve you this French chicken dish at her restaurant if her staff can stop screwing each other long enough.
Coco Vanderpump Rules.
All right, back to Adam. In Greendale, Colorado, they like to throw these on the grill.
So well before. I don't know.
Community bone steak.
Oh, okay.
Sarah, yep. The Bundys get these with red sauce or green sauce?
The Bundys get these with red sauce or green sauce.
Yeah. Do you know the show? Do you know the food?
The show is Married with Children. The food, I don't know where the food goes. Wait, Married with Chilled Drenchiladas? Thank you.
Tara.
Yeah.
John Connor's mom might have this in Maine.
Lobsterminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Sutton Foster thinks this Chinese omelet can help those with age lines.
Egg Foo Younger.
Egg Foo Younger. David Suchet?
Suchet.
Solves the mystery of the Skork Crew pasta.
Corkscrew pasta. Not Skork Crew.
Yeah.
Who can you read it again?
No.
David Suchet solves the mystery of the corkscrew pasta.
Okay. I don't know who David Suchet is.
Yeah, me either. Well, I mean, I do now, but I mean, I would have known.
And the corkscrew is, Hirotini?
So close. Purotini. Puro.
Poirot.
Poirot?
Gotcha. Poirot.
Okay. Poirot.
Yep.
Jessica Fletcher will solve the mystery of poultry turning on a spit.
Murder, she rotisserie.
Murder, she rotisserie chicken.
Yep. Oh, boy.
This comedy duo loves these little crustaceans with their shells on. This comedy duo loves these little crustaceans with their shells still on. I don't know. Who is this?
Adam.
Adam.
Yeah, it's me. Duo. Crustaceans. I like both those things.
You have any idea what either of those are?
Their shells on. No.
Anybody?
No.
Key and Peele and eat shrimp?
Yep.
Ah! Oh.
Of course.
All right.
I'm getting all the weird, like, specific, like, adjective foods. Like, T-bone steak and Peele and eat shrimp. Thanks,
Sarah.
Mickey.
Yep.
After ballet class, Sutton Foster will need some of these if she's going to whip up a salad.
Bun heads of lettuce?
Correct. All right, this round's still going on, but let's interrupt for a score break.
Okay.
Here at the 36th question.
Okay. You don't want to finish out the...
Oh, my God. Scores,
please.
All right,
fine. God, Adam has 7, Sarah has 9, I have 10.
All right. Yeah, what I call for a score break. I'm calling for a score break.
Just don't...
Oh, I should have waited until the end of the round.
It's weird.
Oh, I get it. All right, Woody...
Yeah, we're trying to help you.
No, I was joking. Oh. I knew what I was doing.
All right,
Woody
fine.
Woody picked these right from the field in Indiana. He ate his like a typewriter.
Woody.
Yeah, this is not you, Tara.
Yes, it is. That's why I was trying to tell
yes,
you.
Yes, it is. That's the point.
That's why we were trying to tell you not to do that.
Oh, I thought you were saying... Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right.
I will kick you in the balls right now.
Oh, wait.
I don't... What?
Hi.
I don't know.
I don't know?
No. Proceed. What is it?
Anybody?
Cheers of corn.
Cheers of corn.
Oh, cheers of corn.
Do they have these little greasy salad toppings on Melmac? Oh, I'm sorry. Not greasy. Grassy.
Grassy. Okay.
That changes the equation.
That's better. Thank you. That would be alfalfa sprouts.
Yeah. Thank you. Phew. Alfalfa sprouts.
Like alf bacon bits? What?
Yeah. Captain Steubing starts every morning with a steaming bowl of this.
Sorry. That's what she said. Love boat meal?
The love boat meal. Watson cannot figure out what's in his sushi, sucker. Watson cannot figure out what's in his sushi, Adam. Sucker.
No, me.
No, Tara.
No, I'm just letting Adam know what the question was. No Notes Dave episode.
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I don't.
Anybody?
Elementary?
No.
Ah!
Sherlocktopus.
Oh.
Oh.
Lucy Liu will need one of these to keep her ground meat, shredded cheese, and lettuce in.
For Adam.
Want to hear that again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucy Liu will need one of these to keep her ground meat, shredded lettuce, and lettuce in.
This one I know.
Oh, Taco Shellamentary.
Taco Shellamentary. That is awesome. Oh my God. All right. Elizabeth Moss investigates just what this vegetable is. All we know is it's not butternut.
Just what this vegetable is.
Yeah.
All we know is it's not butternut.
Yeah.
Top of the lake corn squash?
Top of the lake acorn squash. Top of the lake corn squash.
Oh, my God.
Wow, that was amazing.
I didn't even know acorn squash was a thing.
Yeah,
it's a gross thing, but it's a thing. God,
this is the worst. All right. How Robert Gill... Help me out.
Guillaume?
Guillaume likes his eggs. How Robert Guillaume likes his eggs.
Eggs Benson addict?
Benson E side. Oh.
Oh, Benson E side.
Oh, crone.
Ah. Oh, well.
All right. Does that make sense? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That was round two.
Still extremely, extremely close. Adam has 9. I have 10. Sarah has 11.
All right. We have 18 questions left. Round three, desserts and sweets. Desserts and sweets.
Is this Adam's time to shine? He's the baker on the crew.
What you need between courses is a refreshing scoop of Hasselhoff.
It's never been the case.
Sorbet watch.
Sorbet watch.
Love it.
Oh my God, this is the best game ever. The Easter time pastry you want when your town has been trapped for, about 3 weeks now.
The Easter time pastry?
Yeah, I've had these at Christmas, so I don't know. But I guess it makes sense for Easter, but I never had them at Easter. I always had them at Christmas, but that might be a Cole family thing. I don't want to mislead you. I'm going to assume
Jewish.
Mr. Rob Hartman knows what the fuck he's talking about.
Easter time pastry. I am actually not sure, so I'm going to go with sticky bunder the dome.
It's so close. I'm kind of tempted to give it to you.
Cinnamon bunder the dome?
Hot cross there. Bunder the dome. Is that okay?
Bunting a break over here.
Okay. It's such
if
an important game.
If it comes down to a difference of 1 point, I will eat that one, as it were.
Well, I just don't. I don't.
There were other options.
Hot cross,
I guess. I get his point. Yeah. I get her point, rather.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Robert Stack investigates aliens' favorite candy. Robert Stack investigates aliens' favorite candy.
Unsolved Mr. Reese's Pieces.
Unsolved Mysteries and Reese's Pieces.
Sticky!
All right. Vampires love light, fluffy, spongy cake.
Angel food cake?
Yeah.
Yeah, that works. That's not the answer, but
that
also works.
Works.
Yeah.
What is the answer?
The Strangel food cake.
But they both work.
Yeah, they both work. Yeah.
Oh.
Have some of this frozen fruit flavored treat before you ring for legal advice. Have some of this frozen fruit flavored treat before you ring for legal advice.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Before you ring for legal advice.
Yeah.
Ring for legal advice. Icy fruit flavored treat. Oh, geez.
The show you watch. And a treat you enjoy, from what I can recall.
Do you have any idea of either half of that equation?
Shows I watch and fruit-flavored icy treats I enjoy?
Yeah. All right.
Screamsicle?
No.
Sure Better Call Saul?
Sure Better Call Saul.
Oh.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Brenda's friends might blimp out on these cookies, but it's not a sleepover.
Beverly Hills 90210 Oreos.
Nice.
Very good. This is for Adam. Buffy's ex might serve you a scoop of this frozen Italian treat.
Angelotto.
Yeah, there's Angel proper. Commander Adama always had to bring these to school when Lee had a birthday. Make enough for the whole class.
Make enough for the whole class.
I love this one because I'm imagining the whole story in my head.
Battlestar Galactic Cupcakes?
Yep.
All right. She's a redhead country gal who likes hers with extra nuts, hot fudge, and a cherry on top.
Okay, the show is Nashville. But repeat it.
She's a redheaded country gal.
Yep.
Who likes hers with extra nuts, hot fudge, and a cherry on top.
Oh.
Well, maybe now it's redheaded country girl. I don't know how to get there from
anybody?
Nashville and Sunday.
Well, that's your mistake. It's not splits. Nashville.
What is it?
Re-banana
Adam
split.
Got it. Yeah. Re-banana split. Reba,
oh.
Banana split.
Oh. Reba.
Yeah.
That next one is for Adam.
Yeah, so everybody's got three questions left.
Okay.
Lawyers and people pretending to be lawyers love this Italian custardy cake.
Ugh.
Lawyers and people pretending to be lawyers love this Italian custardy cake. Any idea?
Custardy cake.
Talk it out, Adam.
I know.
You're not talking it out.
I'm trying.
Nope.
I mean, the grinder is all I can think of.
But what's the other side?
Is it tiramisu, maybe? I don't know.
You're so close.
What is it?
Tiramisu's.
Tiramisu!
Oh,
tiramisu! The other show where someone's pretending to be a lawyer.
Damn it!
Aiden Turner will give you a square of this. It's loaded with antioxidants.
Aiden Turner
will give you a square of this. It's loaded with antioxidants.
Loaded with antioxidants. I don't think I know that.
Do you know the show?
Huh?
I was just talking through it. Do you know the show? Do you know
no.
the food?
I don't know the show.
Tara?
The food.
Pole dark chocolate.
Oh.
Tara?
Okay. Yeah.
Tyler Posey has figured out the clue. Don't forget to drink your...
Ovaltine Wolf?
Ovaltine nice. Wolf. Back to Adam. Biker gangs love this Florida citrus dessert.
Sons of Anarchy Lime Pie.
Sons of Anarchy Lime Pie. Correct. After a nuclear attack, maybe you want some mini marshmallows floating in your mug of this.
After a nuclear attack,
maybe
you want some mini marshmallows.
Right. Floating in your mug of this.
Mug of this.
Yeah.
Cocoa, Swiss Miss, chocolate, nuclear attack, Battlestar Galactic Cocoa?
Anybody?
No.
Jericho?
Damn it, Jericho!
So bad at picky.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Your second to last question.
Okay.
Strawberry, vanilla, chocolate, and horror movie tropes.
Neapolitan ice cream queens?
That's more than we need.
Okay.
Neapolitan ice cream.
Okay.
Is fine.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. Everybody's got one question left to see if it's going to matter.
Fuck, it's so, so close. Adam has 13. Sarah has 13. I have 14.
Oh, okay. So, oh my goodness. All right. Oh, so that means Tara, if you get your question, it's over.
Yep.
But also, everybody's got to get their question to tie you.
Yep.
So they got to get it right. You got to get it wrong. So Adam, this blonde train wreck loves this on her pie.
Tammy Schumer.
This blonde train wreck loves this on her pie. What's the show?
Is it that show just called Amy Schumer?
No, we're not going to get it.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's Inside Amy Schumer.
Inside Amy Schumer.
And anybody?
No.
Inside Amy Schumerang.
Oh, meringue.
Yeah.
Oh. Right.
Yeah, that's
all right. Okay. Comes down to you, Sarah. You got to get it to maybe force a tie. Liz Lemon probably made this as a science experiment in school with Dixie cups, sugar water, and string.
30 Rock Candy.
30 Rock Candy. All right. At this point, it is tied.
Don't fuck this up, Mitchell.
Tara, answers for the season win.
Yep.
Answers wrong for a tiebreak.
Yep.
How Tobias Funke stays fresh?
Damn it.
Arrested Development with an I? No, what?
Arrested Development. Fresh maker.
Damn it.
Oh, my. All right. So, guys.
Shit. I just peed a little.
Yeah. So, Adam, take a break. You're out.
But amazing effort. Oh, my God. That was could not have been closer.
Fellow valued guests, I'm sorry. I'm going to be beating myself up about gin and tonic for weeks.
So, I will read the clue.
Yep.
First person answers correctly. I will try to compensate for Sarah's half a second lag or however.
Yep.
So, I'll be the arbiter of that.
Okay.
First person to shout out wins. I mean, shouts out the right answer wins.
Mm-hmm.
If your answer that you shout out is incorrect, the other person gets the answer before you get a second chance.
Okay.
That's the way we do tiebreakers here.
Okay.
Are you ready, Tara?
Yep.
Are you ready, Sarah?
Sort of.
All right. So remember, we're now out. This is a tiebreaker, so we're out of desserts. This could be anything. Okay?
Yep.
When you want a platter of these at your picnic, ask a blind superhero.
Daredeviled eggs.
Oh.
Tara.
Congratulations, Tara.
Nicely done, Tara.
Well fought season. And
thank you so much. History repeats itself.
Try and you succeed. You're the best around. Nothing's ever gonna keep you down. You're the best around. Daredeviled eggs gonna keep them down.
Oh, congratulations, Tara.
Thank you so much.
Well fought. Nice, well, guys.
Nicely done. Sorry we made it take so long.
Yeah, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Adam Grossworth, how can people find out more about you, Adam the Man?
I'm on the Twitter at Adam807, and I'm covering Once Upon a Time on Previous.tv and some other stuff here and there.
Sarah, what do you got going?
Please feel free to visit my true crime blog, The Blotter. That's the-blotter.com to talk about all media true crime.
Tara?
As I mentioned up top, I will be covering The Good Wife all this season, so that coverage starts this week. And I will also be covering American Horror Story Hotel. Ooh.
Yes!
Ooh. A reminder, Beverly Hills 90210 coverage continues on again with it.
And how. Yes, and this week we covered the Lifetime unauthorized movie as a bonus. So yes. That is up now. Check it out.
All right, so that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. You may remember I forgot to do show notes this week. So we went to court and then Tara won the game time.
There was a cannon in there. Adam was successful.
Ta-da! And
cake.
Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Don't look at my wig.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm just happy to be nominated.
And Adam J. Grossworth.
Spock has a beard.
I am David T. Cole. Thank you for listening. This has been Extra Hot Great. We'll see you right here in 2 weeks' time, taking next week off.
Good morning, Extra Hot Great Gang.